Around the news, buckle up. It's showtime.
And then, you know, everybody said, what we say about Barack Obama? Well, he's just not black enough. Why? Because he's light-skinned and articulate? Because he paid back his student loans? Because he's married to his baby, his mama? No, his character's not black, but his lips is blacker than a motherfucker. Okay. Them some cool Filter King lips if I ever seen cool Filter King lips. And that's black enough for me.
Oh, I haven't played that opening monologue for a while. That's Comedian Some More. Now, that was early, early. I want to say that was somewhere around 2007. Maybe during the comedy bit that she did talking about Barack Obama. Back then, you know, when every black person was supporting Hillary Clinton, I know a lot of you have forgotten that because it's been over 4 or 5 years now. You know, when every African-American was supporting Hillary Clinton, you know, Charlie Rangel in New York, Reverend Al Sharpton, you know, the entire Congressional Black Caucus. You remember when every African-American was supporting Hillary Clinton because of their devotion, dedication, and, dare I say, genital hugging of Bill Clinton that they never got rid of? You know, he moved his offices up to Harlem, so he was one of them. It's Toni Morrison who called Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton, our first black president. And then here it was, at least a somewhat authentic black man, who at least had more blackness in him than Bill did, they completely shunned him in the beginning until the media told them which way to go. You remember that. Media didn't like Hillary Clinton, completely excoriated her through the press, and then everybody became, you know, a Barack Obama supporter out of nowhere. Now you got Reverend Al Sharpton on MSNBC. You know, the NBC channel, now Barack's channel. You know that. You know what I'm talking about. But that's why we're having that discussion. This may seem old because the election's already over. It's over 2 weeks old. But I'm glad that I finally had an opportunity to speak to this gentleman we're about to have on the air today. This gentleman is Dr. Robert Rose. He is an education expert and the author of a book that he has re-released called Racism 70s Style. That's right, Racism 70s Style. The 2012 election results made it evident that there's still a racial divide in our country. And if you're just joining us, folks, it's Reese on the Radio, 3 minutes after the hour right here on November the 20th, 2012. So please welcome our guest for an hour, so we can have an in-depth discussion. I think I'm going to disagree with this guy wholeheartedly. As a black man, I am going to disagree with Dr. Robert Rose entirely. Unless, of course, he sees things my way, and then, you know, we'll agree. But we'll decide on that when he gets on the line. Please let me introduce you to him again. He is the author of Racism 70s Style. Right here on Reese on the Radio, please give a warm welcome to Dr. Robert Rose. Dr. Rose, welcome to the program, sir.
Well, instead of clapping, I'd rather people throw money. Books.
I think we all believe that. We'll get into the book, which you re-released, Racism City Style, and I was born in 1969, so I believe that I have a strong knowledge of that era, the civil rights movement of 1964. I believe that I have a very strong knowledge of black history as a black man myself. What you're discussing here today is about race relations and how they were made evident in the 2012 elections. Do you care to sort of enlighten us where it is that you're coming from?
Actually, that came from the publicity people. My point is my book, the original title of it was We the Victims. And part of what I was trying to say is that when you are prejudiced, when you use your power, abuse your power to hurt any other human being and degrade another human being, you degrade yourself. So when the teachers that I worked with were hurting the black students, they were dishonoring themselves and they were deteriorating their own moral fiber. And that's what the book was supposed to be about, and it was telling about how what racism was like in the city of San Bernardino. Now, the publisher, and if you've got any books published, you know, after you publish something, you lose your right to, to do anything about it. And I was sitting in the in an all-black school where I was teaching, and somebody called and said, "Hey, are you Robert Rose?" "Yeah." He said, "What? You have a lot of guts to do what you did." And I said, "Well, what did I do?" "You wrote this book, Black Row, Back Row for Niggers." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Aren't you Robert Rose?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "I've got a book right before me. It says Back Row for Niggers." And I just about died. I thought, my God, that's SOB publisher. He never even told me he was going to do that or anything else. And so, because the whole point of it was we the victims. But just like the publicist said, you know, "Dr. Rose, we'd like you to talk about race relations and the politics." I'd rather talk about race relations, period, and how people do things to each other. What causes people to behave like we do as, in terrible, and hurt people in terrible ways and feel good about it? That's what always
amazes. Do you believe, Dr. Rose, that there is an inherent racism in our country? Do you believe that it's so widespread? In essence, what I'm asking here is that do you believe that racial tensions in this country have not subsided or not have sort of dwindled in our new sort of in our new society?
No, I think things obviously got better, because when I started teaching and you'd ask a group of black kids what they wanted to be, nobody ever said they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or a businessman. You know, they said, "Well, you know, I'll either go on welfare or I'm going to, I'll work at McDonald's or I'll be a construction person." But the last couple of years that I taught, my kids would say, "Yeah, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer." I mean, there was always the kids all the time that were going to be professional athletes, you know, and singers and things like that. But the idea that the intellect of the black person wasn't sufficient to get into other kinds of things. And this is the thing that I fought against in the district. And I managed to, like I taught at, I had 3 years I had special ed with all black children. And at the end of the 3 years, I got 14 out of 18 out of the special ed. And it wasn't because I was a genius, it was because I knew they were, most of them, misdiagnosed. And so instead of following the thing that came down from above, you know, that, well, these kids can't learn anything, and, you know, they gave us, ironing boards and sewing machines and things, and I didn't pay any attention to that. I just, you know, I taught them how to read and write and do art and music and have a good time, but, and I was going upstream all the time. And because they kept saying, "Well, you know, these kids can't learn," and it was just such nonsense. And I went to the school board. I said, "You know, it's very interesting." I said, "On the West End, you know, we have 38 special ed classes," and I said, "Of course, they're mostly with black and at that time a smattering of Hispanics in there." I said, "On the West End, there's 6 learning handicap classes, and there's no special ed class." I said, "This is statistically crazy." I said, "My school here, there's 800 kids, and we have 5 kids that have been labeled gifted. Out of 800 kids," I said, "again, that's statistically wrong." But the people downtown said, "Well, that's just the way it is." Well, I trained some of my kids to pass a test called the Raven's Matrix. It's a color test. It's a fair test. And Mike, I had a bunch of kids, not in my special ed then, but in my regular classes, that showed they were gifted. And I sent 5 of them downtown to be tested. And on the test that I gave them, they all scored in the gifted range. Well, the test came back, and not a single one of them scored above 95. So I asked him, I said, you know, I asked the kid, I said, well, what happened? Oh, Mr. Rose, you know, the psychologist, he never even looked at us. He never looked at me. He never talked to me. You know, you talk to me, you know, you believe in me, but he made me really nervous. You know, I mean, what kind of a psychologist was that? That doesn't even look at the kids and then gives them a test when he knows that when you make a kid nervous, he's going to do poorly or not do as well as he could. So is those kind of...
Don't you think... Dr. Ross, let me interrupt you there.
Let me tell you
where it is, what I see, what I think of when I hear that story about young kids dealing with a psychologist, or if you will, because this isn't a psychiatrist. Psychologists is a different breed of what I call a mental doctor, but a psychologist.
Right.
What I see with young black kids when it comes to dealing with authority or people who are involved in administrative roles, especially if they're predominantly white in that field, black kids are not taught by their parents how to deal with, one, members of authority, or how to associate or to converse with whites. They don't know how. They have been taught in the black community to fear whiting. They have been taught to be apprehensive about engaging with white people, what it is that you can and cannot tell them. I noticed in your bio that you study something that is very near and dear to me, and it's called self-helplessness, that you're very familiar with. Wouldn't you agree that what it is that you're talking about, in some ways, the parents have been responsible for these kids' apprehension or fear or inability to sort of function in those situations?
Yeah, but see, another thing, when we're taught as teachers to on a parent conference, we're told, you know, tell the parents, you know, what you want them to do for their kid. Tell the parents, you know, the things they need to do. Well, and when I start interviewing some of my black parents, you know, they look at me like, you know, here we go again. He's going to tell us all that stuff, you know, all this bad stuff about my kid. And I would say to them, you know, Mrs. Thompson, you know, and Mr. Thompson, you know, and there's Jack sitting there. I said, you know, I've only had him for a couple of weeks, you know, and I just got a few papers on him. I don't know really that much about him. But you're the expert on him. And when I say that, they would look at me like, what are you talking about? I said, you know him. You know, you've been living with him 24/7 for years. You know what he is, what he thinks about. I said, tell me about your kid. Tell me what you do in your family to have fun. Tell me how you show, you know, affection for each other, you know, and things like that. And they would just, you just watch their faces just relax. Their whole body would relax. And time after time, they said, you know, this is the first time that any teacher has ever treated me and my wife like a human being. And, you know, that statement is horrific. It's horrific, and it hasn't changed that much in some ways, in some places. You know, there's a lot more teachers that are more sensitive now, but the structure is the teacher is the boss, and the parent better do what the boss tells you to do. And I would tell the parent, you know, if you love your child and show your child you love him, he will come to school comfortable, and he will listen to me, and then I can teach him. I don't have to worry about discipline.
But that's the way it was. But we're
well
just, aware, as I just expressed, Dr. Rose, is that it is a constant in the black community with really, really ardent African-Americans who do not trust their white counterparts. They teach and raise their children to not trust white folks, to not trust them. This is, right off the bat, this is a resistance. I'm going to give you an example. This was somebody in the media who was talking about Mitt Romney and about him having conversations with African Americans at the NAACP's 103rd convention. This is what the white woman said about Mitt Romney, a white man, talking to blacks.
He's so condescending, talking to African Americans about how they need to raise their children in two-parent households. This is not the way in which you endear yourself to a minority.
It's not how you endear yourself with a minority. This is a white woman. So in order to endear yourself with a minority, you don't talk down to them and tell them how they need to live in a two-parent household. You get my point?
Yeah. But my point is that you don't talk down to anybody. And if the teachers are taught
talk
down
to
anybody,
down.
They won't be talking down to black any more than anybody else.
Doc Rose, that's not talk. Do you believe that telling African Americans that a successful child statistically overall is a better child when he's raised in a two-parent household, you think that's talking down to someone?
That's what?
Do you think that that is talking down to a black person?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, my. Come on, doctor.
It's talking to anybody when you tell about two-parent families. You know, nowadays when I have so many families that I interviewed where just the mother was there, whether it was white, black, or Hispanic, or Native American, you know, you don't tell that you help the parent. You encourage the parent to do the best she, or if it's the father, that he can do. That's all.
I'm not suggesting that. What I'm suggesting here is I'm not suggesting that you're putting down a person if they're in a single parent household. I'm not suggesting that.
Okay.
What I'm saying to you is, when I asked you what, is when you talk to black people about two parent households and how children statistically do better under that in that environment, you suggested that's talking down to them.
No, I see what you mean there. No, you're talking about something that is based on some kind of evidence, and what the people do with it, that's up to them. But I don't see that that's necessarily talking down to them. You're giving information.
Right, exactly.
At the same time, there is the inference there that, you know, it's too bad that you don't have a husband or you don't have a wife. There is that inference in that statement.
You believe that there's an inference in that statement? I don't get that impression when I hear that. If I were to tell the black community, now let me speak. Okay, because I'll speak from my experiences within the black community, because I'll put it in that perspective, and I'll get your view on that as a teacher and as an educator. Let me ask you this: if I tell you that in my community, when I speak to African Americans, that when the concept of marriage is brought up in the black community, the black community responds by saying, marriage, that's what white folks do.
Mm. What are you saying there?
Black people respond to the idea of marriage, having a husband and a wife in the home raising children, when you hear, like when I told my black friends or black people that I've met that during my marriage, my first marriage, my wife and I did not have our son until after we got married. Black people responded to me by saying, "Oh, you're trying to be white. You're trying to follow the white people's way." You get my point?
Okay, I get your drift. Now I see what you're saying. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that you're saying that the black population, but I know you're not talking about the whole black population. You're talking about the people that are economically, you know, let's call it the lower class or poverty. I think that's more common there. When you talk to middle class black people, I don't think that they would go along with that.
They wouldn't, exactly. They understand. See, those middle class blacks, I believe, follow. They don't consider themselves as quote unquote middle class blacks or a part of what they consider themselves as a part of mainstream America. They don't identify themselves mainly through color or don't put chips on their shoulder because of their color. Not just because they're accomplished. is just because they refuse to see themselves as victims. Those are accomplished. Those are accomplished blacks.
Well, I can identify with those people because raised the first 7 years as an Orthodox Jewish kid, and then going through living in Catholic neighborhoods and learning to be a hell of a good fighter, you know, and even when you won the fight, you lost because you emotionally were hurt that somebody was picking on you, you know, for what reason? What did you do? You know, I hadn't done anything, you know. And people would feel the top of my head to see if I had horns, you know, and they'd call me all kinds of names. So, you know, that was tough. But what I did is what a lot of people do and what you're saying the middle class does is I rejected my religion. I just rejected it. And for years I felt very cowardly about it. When I moved into a new neighborhood, you know, I wouldn't deny if somebody said, "Are you Jewish?" But I wouldn't go out and say it, you know. When they found it out, that's when I'd have to fight, and then I'd beat somebody up, you know, and then they'd leave me alone, you know, and then everybody was my friend because I was a good fighter. But yeah, it always hurt me. The point is that I felt cowardly that I didn't defend myself. And I think that the people that you're talking about, the middle-class black who is turning their back on the general black population that's not doing as well as they are, I think that they have to feel that too. They have to feel that rejection in themselves.
I'll tell you the truth, doctor. And by the way, if you're just joining us, we're on the phone with Dr. Robert Rose, the author of the book Racism 70 Style. He is an education expert as well. Let me disagree with you there. See, many people believe that those African Americans who decide that they are going to become mainstream Americans, have realized something that a lot of what would be considered lower class or poverty-ridden blacks refuse to recognize. What those lower class blacks will tell you often, that in order for you to be authentic, you must be ill-educated, if not uneducated. You must speak with a slang. You cannot speak proper English. You have to dress and act a particular way. The hood is good, as a lot of them say. Someone like me, many of them look on me as some sort of aberration, or I'm some anomaly. They look at me in some sort of way to say that I'm different. I am an outcast. I am often alienated. But you know what it is that I throw right back in their face? I don't give a damn. It's not that I've shunned you. I've not shunned you. I've accepted that in order for you to be authentic, you have to be this ignorant person, and I will not let you ostracize me because I chose a different path. They all want to be individuals but act alike. I refuse to be that way. The sad part about African Americans today is that
I like that because when I had my 10 years, I taught at-risk kids from fifth grade to ninth grade, and we were talking about, you know, the way they dressed, and I said, you know, and they would say that, you know, that each one was an individual, and I stood up and I said, well, if each one of you is individual, then when I did the walk, I said, how come you all walk this way? You know, and they said, what do you mean? I said, how can you call yourself an individual when each one of you, I said, I couldn't, if it was, you know, if you were wearing the same clothes and everything, I couldn't tell one from the other because the walk is the same walk, you know, if you're walking behind you. And they said, well, that doesn't mean anything, you know, we're unique, each one of us is unique, and we do what we want. I said, you don't do what you want. That's why you're in this class. You're just fighting, you know, trying to prove that you're as good as anybody else, but the way you're doing it isn't working, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. You would be successful, and we had great discussions about, you know, what do you do to fit in or to get better when that what they said is, you know, we go back to the hood. And, you know, in our neighborhood, And if we start, you know, talking like you, Dr. Rose, or something like that, you know, we're going to be in trouble, you know. And I said, well, I understand that. I said, well, what you need to do is you have to be able to, if you want to get ahead in this world, and I said, it's unfortunate, it's a white world. And I said, you know, people will judge you on your language. I said, I know about Ebonics, and you don't hear me talking Ebonics. I'm not playing your game, and I'm not high-fiving you guys, because I don't want you to think that this is necessarily the best way to be. I'm trying to teach you a way that you're going to be successful in another, you know, economically successful and successful as a person. And it really was wonderful. We turned out some great kids.
Dr. Rose, if you really want to reach those children, and I can see how your conversation with them in some ways would enlighten them, but let me give you, if I may, let me give you some talking points to talk to these little Negroes, as I like to call them. And it's important because you seem like a very genuinely, very calm, very, very decent and respectful kind of guy. I couldn't be in your classroom. The Board of Education or the educational system would throw me out in a minute for what I'm about to say. But there is a way that you can articulate this better than I could. And I suggest that you do, and it's very important, because you've touched on it, and I've touched on it a little as well. It's not so much about the way that they walk. I spent 2.5 years locked up in Rikers Island, one of the worst city jails, okay, for 2.5 years, okay, fighting a crime that I didn't commit. While I was in there, I took every opportunity I could to teach young black men exactly what it is that we're talking about. The way that I expressed it to them was very simple. I said, you are in here with 1,800 other inmates. 1,800 other inmates. I could find 500 of you who wear do-rags on your head, wear white beater T-shirts, and wear Nike sneakers. I could find 500 of you. I can ask you all the same slang words. What do you call a large amount of money? Oh, a stack. What do you call your girl? Oh, my boo or my bitch. I said, 500 of you who've never met each other. You talk alike. You walk alike. You listen to the same music. All of you talk about the same drama and the same episodes in your city exactly the same. I could go to 500 of you and get the same story from each and every one of you. But yet you meet a black man like me. I speak proper. I'm self-educated. I've had corporate jobs since I'm 19 years old. I don't adhere to ghetto lifestyle. I've never tried to. And I'm locked up in jail with each and every one of you. But yet I refuse to fall into the mold. Yet you people in my face ostracize me for being different while calling yourselves individuals. I laugh at each and every one of you, because when you walk out of here, you're going to meet a million more people who are just like you, who act just like you, and you're trying to tell me you're different. You can't be. If you really want to show courage, if you really want to show toughness is Dr. Martin Luther King walking through a march filled with white people who hated him, who were willing to stone him and beat him because he wanted equal rights. Toughness is Malcolm X going against the Nation of Islam and speaking truth to power against the Prophet Muhammad. Okay? Speaking truth to power against his own quote-unquote hierarchy within the Nation of Islam, and got shot and killed for it. That's real toughness. Walking around doing the same things, selling the same drugs, not being as educated as being as uneducated as everybody else is not courage. That is fear. That is cowardice. You don't want to be ostracized. You don't want to be called names. You don't want to be kicked out of the crew. You're a coward and a follower. Please don't tell me how tough you are.
Well, you've got to say. I agree with you. You're giving me a good education here. And
appreciate that. You're not tough if you act like everybody else. You're just fitting in. You're a face in the crowd. You're a nobody. If there are 100, you know, there's a great joke that I heard because I'm an old Youngman, Milton Berle kind of joke. Because I'm only 43 years old, but I love all the old comedians. You know, Bob Hope and all those guys. There was a great joke that I heard when I was a kid. If you lived in China and you were one in a million, you'd find out there's 1,000 people just like you. Because that's a population of a billion. You know? So
okay.
That's the truth about these kids. And if you really want to talk to them about where it is that they are and where it is that they need to go, you've got to tell them right off the bat. You're nothing if you look like everybody else around you. You're just a face in the crowd. You're a speck. You're a speck in all of this. If you want to be a standout, if you want to show courage, dare to be different. That shows real courage.
Well, in that at-risk program that I had, it was interesting that I had, you know, many gang members. I had gals that were, you know, that we took off the street and got back into school. But the thing about it was, it is, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I think that it's hard to do for teachers to do this because they're told to, you know, to treat all kids, supposedly all kids the same, although they don't do it. What I try to do, and this is what my book, The Complete Teacher, talks about. I call it the self-sustaining classroom. I taught kids how to talk to each other, how to communicate to each other. And the way that I did this is that I spent time with kids individually. And high school teachers say, well, I can't do that. Well, I did that in high school. I did it in my university classes. You can take the time. If you don't get so involved in just thinking you have to get content out, if you think that the most important thing is your relationship with each kid, and then you change each kid one by one, then in the classroom, he begins to treat the other kids the way that you're treating them. In the classroom, what I did is I said, okay, and they came in, and I said, we have to have some rules. We're going to make the rules together. And the idea of you making the rules together, as I said, that when you break the rule, there's going to be consequences. You guys are going to make the consequences. And they were just freaking out about that. And then so they made the consequences. Then I said, if for each infraction, there'll be a couple of consequences. When you have been proven to be guilty of an infraction, you will choose your consequence. And when they did that, I hardly ever had any kid, no matter what he did, after he had gotten what he never gets, which is justice, when they got justice, he changed. His whole personality changed because he wasn't used to getting justice. He didn't know about it. And it wasn't just a black kid. It was any kid in school because there is no justice in the schools. And so by having the sense of justice, and then I said, even after you've been convicted and you took your consequence, if you're really sure that it wasn't fair, we had a student court. You can hold it. You can get your defense attorney, your witnesses, you know. And if you're cleared of whatever it is, then it's gone. You know, we don't punish people if they're innocent. And I said, even you know, if you can prove that you didn't do it, that's fine. You know, but the idea of justice is really strong. I saw something on I think it was 60 Minutes the other day, where the babies have a sense of justice. And when you go through schools, you constantly find out that you're not getting justice. And part of it is the way it's structured, where the teacher is power, you know, strictly power. And what you heard me say is that I was releasing some of my power. I was sharing my power with the kids. I was empowering them. And when they felt powerful, then they began to take responsibility for their actions. Most of the schools I was in, I got to be the head teacher. I could never be principal because I was too much of an iconoclast. But I could be a head teacher. So I would be out of the room sometimes for an hour at a time. And I'd come back, you know, and everything was running smoothly. And I'm talking about grade classes, too. And people said, that,
well,
no, you can't do that. Well,
we're going to talk about some of that when we come back. Stay for a break with us for a little bit.
Sure.
You know what you might want to play this audio for some of those young African-American kids. I play this audio sometimes. I haven't played it in a little bit of a while. But truth be told, what happens in the black community today is that they often tell young black kids, and like you just suggested, Dr. Rose, is that black kids, if they started to talk like you, that they would be ostracized in their community and be called an Uncle Tom. Well, you can always play this audio for them.
If anyone wants to call someone an Uncle Tom, first read the book. Uncle Tom was a heroic figure. Uncle Tom stood up against the Democrat Simon Legree, who wanted to enslave those people. He stood up and he fought, and he was willing to die for freedom. So anyone who wants to call me or any other African American an Uncle Tom doesn't know what they're talking about, because you don't know what an Uncle Tom is. You're a Sambo, you're a Quimbo, you're working for the Democrats, that's the party of slavery, and you're continuing the enslavement of our people.
Another sister shooting hair on Damaris. Amputees and free time, Sierra Leone's. The church wasn't honest. The state put the youth in a harness, creating hostility among us. The teacher said no college. Still kid gotta get a check, flip a couple commas. People wanna bomb us. More people gotta scatter and run from us. It on Zeus and Apollo and Adonis. But what you've done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. What you've done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. Years. She got a dark, dark wavy hair with a voice that you just don't care. She got a skirt with another tie. She got a daddy never gave her. She drink a beer with the mountains up. She got knocked up in a pickup truck. But she got engaged when she was 19 to this dude who was acting insane. Had a 45 that he always claimed. She said one day, one day, one too many days. Now we thought that she ran away, never to be heard from, never to be seen. I took the cover of a magazine. I'm just wondering how, just wondering how. What you done is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you put it yourself away. What you done is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. What you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. Yeah, what you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before pulling yourself away.
Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Wow, we're in stereo.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, slightly more than half of the nation has irrationally, at least I believe, re-elected Barack Obama, essentially admitting that they've fallen for the charade. And it's clear that Obama won not by bringing the country together, but by dividing us even further. It's a tactic he's used all year long, and forgive me, I thought we were really smarter than that. He didn't win over voters concerned about the economy or the nation as a whole, but selfish niches seeking special rights and freebies for one group or another. They're the me generation, who are just as likely to tweet what they had for lunch as to invalidate their ballots by illegally posting pictures of them on Facebook. So, while Obama distracted voters from major failures like unemployment with flashy causes, younger generations exhibiting their short attention spans, and cast their vote even though they're going to be the ones who suffer most, I don't get it. Do you? I'm Chuck Woolery. To have a question answered on air, visit Twitter at Chuck Woolery.
Reese on the Radio, we are back. 15 minutes to the top of the hour on this November the 20th, 2012. We are on the phone with Dr. Robert Rose, who is an educator and author of the re-release book, Racism, 70s Style. Dr. Rose, let's talk a little bit about your book.
What I want to tell you is that I agree with your with what I think is your premise, that the people that are downtrodden and everything, they do have to take some responsibility for their lives. They can't be, you know, just living on entitlements and all that. I would agree with that. My question to you is, then how do you expect them, what do they need to help them? Because obviously they're not doing it for themselves. What can you do to help them get out of the situation they're in?
Well, that's very simple. I think what needs to be taught or reinforced, let me recant the word taught. What needs to be reinforced with those people, especially those who are downtrodden, regardless of their race, what we need to do is we need to tap in what is innate in each and every one of them. And what is innate in each and every one of them is prosperity. Each and every one of those people, no matter where they come from, no matter what race they are, is what they wish to do is to prosper. And they must understand how economically and fiscally they can do that. They understand what we have in this country, which is a capitalistic system, a free market system. They must understand how it works, cannot be confused by it. They cannot shun it, because there are people out there who refuse to even acknowledge how the system works. They claim, and I'm going to use the black premise again, politics to many in the black community is the white man's problem. Oh, I don't do all that stuff, man. I don't listen to that stuff. I know nothing about politics, man. That's not my strong suit. But in order for them to survive, they must understand how that works, how taxes work, how their taxes affect their lives, how keeping more of their money is important to their prosperity. If they understand how that system works, they, in fact, afterwards, will do better with their economic standings in life. When African Americans shun that ideology, because if you ask African Americans, Dr. Rose, if you ask them, do they believe that abortion is a genocide on their community? If they don't know, explain to them. 10 million black babies killed under Planned Parenthood. Under any other circumstances, they would call that genocide, right? If you told them that Planned Parenthood buildings were in their community far and wide more than they were in other communities, they're more prominent in African-American communities than liquor stores and Chinese restaurants, they would understand, oh, my God, someone's trying to kill us. If they understood those things and they followed those things in a responsible way, what would they do? They would react to them. If they understood that keeping more of their money ensures their prosperity, they would pay attention to that. But we have to find a way to teach our children, no matter what race, no matter what background, how we are a free market society, how capitalism works for them, and how we do not, you know, people keep talking about class envy. I know the definition of envy. What's happening in our poor communities is not envy. It's class disdain. We see rich people, we hate them. We should not hate being rich. Now we have a culture that tells people, don't get rich, stay mundane, stay mediocre. Don't win. There should be no winners. There should be no losers. Well, how do we understand prosperity if we do not know that there is hard work in winning and losing? That when you lose, not that you, at least you put an effort in, here's an award. No, you have to work hard in order to achieve. We have to reinstill those things and those ideals into our young and into those groups, especially when they're poor. We can't tell them, don't worry about it, the system is rigged, we'll take care of you. And what do they do? There's no cost of living adjustment for poverty. We don't raise the rates on food stamps. We don't raise the rates on welfare in order to adjust to the cost of living. You're stuck. You're stagnant. We must teach people how to prosper. And the way that we get our young kids and our impoverished kids to do better is to explain the system to them. We don't have economics classes in our high schools anymore. We don't have basic banking taught to our children in our homes. There are five. Do you know there are five things in the black household, in the Latino household that aren't talked about to their kids at the dinner table? They don't talk about health. They don't talk about sex. They don't talk about banking. They don't talk about responsibility.
Yeah.
And they damn sure don't talk about rewards. They don't
have
those conversations.
That's why I wrote this book,
kids.
The Complete Teacher, and try to get teachers to understand about what I call the self-sustaining classroom. The Complete Teacher tries to teach the teachers how to run a classroom where the kids, like I told you, are empowered. And it's very difficult to change that in the system because the teachers feel disempowered themselves. They are castrated by the standardized testing that every one of them knows doesn't work, and definitely doesn't work for the poor population at all. And when I wrote a thing, I said, teachers, you know, you're cowardly. You need to stand up to the government and say, I'm not going to teach the standardized test. You all know it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And the same thing with the curriculum. I just told the districts flat out, I'm not teaching that because it isn't helping kids. I'm teaching them things that help them. You said about economics. For 12 years, with integrated classes, I had a classroom business. It was an actual business. We produced products. And the parents and the kids found out how to deal with money. We had our bank in the classroom. There was a cabinet where the money was. And at the end of the year, we had made about $500. And every year, the money was right there. Anybody could take it, you know. And why didn't they take it? Because this was all of their money. They had the sense that they were in this together. When you teach kids that, you know, if you work together, you can accomplish almost anything. My kids felt good about being with each other. And I call it the classroom as an organization. You could feel the things that are happening in the classroom. And I didn't have to know everything that was... Go ahead.
Dr. Rose, you're still currently teaching now, right?
No. No, I'm 80 years old. I have enough trouble getting out of the house.
I didn't know that. But, okay, well, you do have a show on Blog Talk Radio, is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
When does your show air?
It airs at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and often on other days. And I have a mix of people you wouldn't believe, of every kind of race, religion, belief system, field, profession. And I do the same thing with my guests that I do with my kids. I sit down and I just talk to them. We're just like you are talking to me. I mean, I'm enjoying this conversation with you. I feel that we trust each other. I think that if you were in San Bernardino, you and I could be good friends, even though you don't see eye to eye with me and things and vice versa. But what I try to show people, like, because I'm an atheist and I have a lot of religious people on, and at the end of it, they all say, you know, it's amazing, Dr. Rose. You know, we expected the worst for you because you're an atheist. And I said, my whole point is I want people to listen to people disagree, but disagree agreeably, not being disagreeable with each other or insulting. And I refuse to be insulted, and I refuse to insult anybody else. And I've never had to cut anybody off on, you know, we can cut each other off. But I never had to do that.
I appreciate that from you, and you're probably right, because I have plenty of friends who I don't agree with politically and socially, and I'm still good friends with them, you know. And again, it's the idea. I find most of the people that I disagree with that
generally end up joking with each other about our disagreements as opposed to having this anger or disdain for each other. You know, we kind of rib each other back and forth, and that's, you know, that's great for the conversation. You know, when I was growing up, one of the things that I used to say was, you know, every man is my superior and that I may learn from him. And, you know, you can learn from anyone as long as you're willing to listen to them and share ideas with them. I think that the purpose of doing radio is an opportunity to share ideas, even when you don't agree. Even if you end up not agreeing even more strongly than you did walking into it, at least you've had that conversation and you have a mutual respect. That's the best thing to get out of it at the end.
Right. And when people listen to a program that's handled this way, I think they see a model that works. And what I'm trying to tell you about in The Complete Teacher, what I try to do as a teacher, they saw when we had discussions every day, and like you say, you know, in families they don't discuss. We discussed everything. In fact, I used to have a classroom meeting for parents about the second or third day of school, and I said, I'm a very different teacher. Some of you already know about it. I do things differently. You can come in my class and sit the whole day long instead of the 20 minutes. But I said, if you disagree with me and if you start getting on my case, I said, I don't want your kid in my class. I have to teach what I'm comfortable teaching. And you can have your opinion. And you can take your kid and put him in somebody else's class. I'm going to teach this way. So I'm going to tell you how I'm going to do it. And if you don't like it, then take your kid out. And every year I'd have parents, three or four, take kids out. But I had, you know, half a dozen or more that wanted to come in, so it was no problem. But it was the idea that, you know, I deserve the right to be myself. But by being myself, I can allow other people to be themselves. That's why you can do what you do on the radio and I do it on the radio. We allow other people to be themselves. Teachers could do this. Parents should be doing this with their children, of course. And the fact that you're saying that black parents don't do this with their kids, this is really a terrible thing. Because we had a blended family of seven kids, and we discussed everything. And that's one of the things they said, that dinner was one of the happiest times of their life, because they would talk about all the things that happened during the day. And when I had my twins, when they were in the sixth grade, they were in my class the whole year. And there was a situation where I was bragging about all the good things I did. You know, as you can tell, I am due to brag a lot. But so I was bragging about something that I did, and the kids were shaking their head, and my wife started to laugh. And they said, Eric, Ariane, what really happened? And they started to tell me the things that I missed in the classroom that day. And I was astounded, because I had already taught about 15 or 20 years at that time, and I thought I was, you know, the greatest thing since spit, you know. And the kids just really devastated me. And I said, that was going on. The things that were going on underneath my nose, I couldn't believe. And so it gave me a sense of perspective, you know, that, because I used to ask my student teachers and interns, I said, how many of you think you know what's going on in your classroom and you're in complete control? How many are in complete control? You know, of course, they'd all raise their hand because they thought they were supposed to. And I said, you're living in la-la land. You're never in complete control. There's always
something
that you don't know about. That's why it's important for you to listen to your kids, have discussions with them, have a relationship with them. Otherwise, you're going to be in the dark. And even when you think you're in the light.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Robert Rose, who is our guest tonight. Again, check out his book if you can. It's called Racism 70s Child, 70s Style. He is a teacher, educator, and our friend. Let me ask you, lastly, Dr. Rose, look, I'm going to put you on with our producer. Do you mind calling back on our show sometime whenever you feel like it? I know we're on pretty – well, we're early your time because you're all the way in California, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we're on pretty – we'd love to have you back anytime you want. You can just call in. We'll put you right in.
Well, that sounds really good.
Yes, please.
And I can talk about other things besides racism or what?
We can talk
talk about anything under the sun, anything you'd like to. I'd like to talk to you. In fact, if I could get you on again, I'll make sure you set it up with JC, the producer. What I'd love to have you on about is about self-helplessness, and that's an area I'm very, very versed in, and I'd like to talk about that some more with you if you'd come back on the show with us.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about my book, Creating Your Giant Self, because that book got, as you saw in the advertisement there, Dr. Robert Anton Wilson said it was the best self-help book ever. That's what he put in the foreword.
This is what I'll do, Dr. Rose.
I didn't promise him anything.
Dr. Rose, this is what it is that I'll do. I'll put you on with JC right now. If you'd like, we can set it up for Monday.
Okay, let me see. I'll check my calendar and we'll go ahead.
Exactly. I'll put you on with JC right now and we'll
now,
go
that's
to
not
the...
Jesus Christ, is it?
No. Absolutely not. JC, set it up with him. We'll go to the top of the hour. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. It's Resun Radio.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, hi everybody, I'm Chris.
Oh, it's almost on now.
He sure is. I work at Hooper's store right here on Sesame Street. I'm on my lunch break right now, so I thought it would be good to take some time to spend some good time with my good buddy Elmo over here.
Oh, yeah, this is like a play date.
It's a play date.
Okay.
Elmo, I was surprised to find out that there are a lot of people interested in asking you questions.
Really, they are?
And they really are.
A lot?
A whole lot of questions.
Wow.
In fact, questions came from all over the world. The public voted on which questions they liked the most, and those are the questions I'm going to be asking you today.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It is cool. Hey, check it out.
From all over the world?
From all over the world. And you know what? While I was in the shower this morning, I thought of something. Since
you're going to tell us about what you did in the shower? About what you did in the shower?
No, Elmo, we're not going to tell you what we did in the shower. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't heard the news, oh, hell, you know, I've got it. I don't think that any of you have possibly heard the news. Yeah, there's no way you didn't hear the news today, folks. It's everywhere. Okay? It's everywhere. Kevin Clash has resigned from the Sesame Street workshop. You can check ReeseOnTheRadio.com for the full story. But he has resigned after allegations have come forward. Second allegations have come forward. Now, it was bad enough that when this story came out some little over a week ago, the original accuser says that he had a relationship with Kevin Clash when he was 15 years old, some 7 years ago. When Clash, who's now in 52, when he was 45 years old, the first accuser suggested that he had a relationship with Kevin Clash when he was 15 years old. The accuser was 15 years old. Now, although he has recanted that story, the first accuser, it was then revealed that he got paid off to some sum of like $200,000, maybe even more. But now that first accuser says that he wants to come back out. He wants to take his recantation, if you will, come back out and return the money and say, no, we need to pursue this. And I'm assuming because there were reports that a new accuser would come out. And that accuser is now pretty much on the radar. Now, his name is Cecil. TMZ has revealed who he is. He's an El DeBarge-looking cat. From what I gather, he looks like a cross between El DeBarge and Prince post the revolution. You know, with the slick hair. You've probably seen him so far, but if you haven't, you can go to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can see a picture of him. In the picture they have him, he looks like, you know, light skinned, very, very fair skinned young man. But you see the pictures today, he's got like that Prince El DeBarge look. I'm sure you've seen him. If you haven't, check out what he looks like in the video with his hair slicked down. I didn't know that was still in style, unless, of course, your name was Pimp something. It's a very pimp look, very super fly sort of look. But he is rocking it with the very fair skin and a little thin mustache, like a villain from an old 1920s silent film. That's what he looks like. I can't really tell you what the whole look like, but it's very, very close to that. But what I find striking about this is that the news reports do not want, and don't get me wrong, folks. You see, the press has been defending the Sesame Street Workshop and PBS. This is their brand. They love PBS. They love public broadcasting. They love it. And when they are struck with scandal, and when the news media, the mainstream media is struck with scandal, they try their best to spin it. They tried their best to spin it. NBC News did the report today. ABC didn't even do a story on it, I don't think. I didn't see George Stephanopoulos even cover the story. Because I know they don't want to touch it. But NBC News, you know, oh, you know, it's so tragic. If you have children, take them out of the room. Why would NBC tell you to take children out of the room? There was nothing that was described that was graphic. They just didn't want you to know that Elmo was involved. Because they think that kids believe that Elmo is real. I'd like to know what moron that is. They've done everything to let you know who Kevin Clash is. But they are devastated by this. And now he's resigned. He's out of there. Second allegation. No, forget about fighting this. You may remember one Negro named Reese who fought long and hard to clear his name. Did I back down? No. I fought. Are you crazy? I spent 2.5 years in jail. Fought. Resign? Give in? For what? Of course, they had to drop it. But what? You resign? You're innocent. Remember? What happened? What happened? And oh, Whoopi Goldberg. Oh, Whoopi Goldberg. Let's talk about Whoopi. Let's talk about old Whoopi Goldberg. This is Whoopi Goldberg about 5 days ago, when the first accuser recanted the story. They didn't talk about it when he was accused. They didn't bring it up as their hot topic. Here's a man running around with children on the Sesame Street Workshop stage. Didn't talk about it when he was accused the first time. They waited until he recanted the story. But listen to what she says.
We want to sort of report what we feel is really great news to you. The man who accused Elmo puppeteer Kevin Clash of engaging in a sexual relationship with him when he was underage recanted his claim, saying through a lawyer that he wants it to be, he wants it behind him. He just wants to put it behind him. And
he said it was consensual.
Yeah. Because they were adults. They were adults at the time, yeah. So, but, I mean, can you, we saw, you know, all the newspaper articles. We've seen crazy stuff.
How would you do
you know, I don't know, but I have to tell you, it really, you know, Kevin has been a friend of mine for 1,000 years, and this is the last person. This is a man whose life has been devoted to making children happy.
Apparently it is.
I was so bad about this. This guy could have destroyed his career. But he had to leave, Elma.
No, he didn't have to leave. No. He chose.
Okay.
He said, "Before I don't want to taint anything.
Okay.
Let me take a leave of absence clear my name." And then the gentleman recanted.
Okay, so now he comes back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Wow. But it's
a good week for Sesame
Street. It's a good week for Sesame Street.
Between Bird and this,
you know, and for kids and
the parents, they need to know this.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you want to know who this guy is, there's a great documentary called Being Elmo.
Yeah,
if you want to know about him, you want to know where he's from, what he's all about. Check out the documentary, and I'm sad for this young man because whatever he was doing has been undone, and I hope he gets the help that he needs, whatever that is.
Quickly, you know, not quickly enough probably for Kevin, but quick enough for the two of us.
Yeah.
Come back from that kind of stuff.
So, they were happy. He could come back. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you all to do something I normally wouldn't ask you to do. Watch The View tomorrow. Now, I watch that crap for you. I watch it for you so that you can get to see. I get to tell you what it is that I hear, and then I play the audio, and then you're outraged with me. I put myself through the rigmarole of The View. Them cackling broads, I put myself through so then you can hear it after the fact, after I'm outraged, and then I bring you in for the outrage. But here it is. Whoopi has known Kevin for 1,000 years. And now somebody else has come forward. Now someone else has come forward. You think Whoopi's going to talk about it tomorrow? Or do you think that she's going to get on there and try to say, this is not true, this is a lie, this isn't true, it's a lie. And then, if this young boy can prove it, if this young man can prove it, will she be, I don't know, ridiculed? Or will she be forced to shut her goddamn mouth? Oh, on the phone with us is our good friend, all the way from the UK.
Yeah, yeah, Dave.
Harmony.
You're too powerful. You're too
Harmony, are you on hold?
At least with me, they could think that I'm an ignorant nigger. And they might go.
Harmony's on another line. JC. Wait,
he's having another conversation in somewhere.
Yeah, he's
I don't know who he's
talking to. Another bloke.
he's talking to another bloke there. Poverty, you've got us on the air now. You want to talk to us or you want to sit back and relax?
Yeah,
and,
that's okay. We'll put him on.
But listen,
let's get
the
whole boy Magneto.
Let me say something too about Whoopi.
Go ahead.
I'm so sick and tired. I watch The Talk. I don't care about The View.
Right.
I like The Talk a lot better. The View, Whoopi's been on air for what, since Star Jones left?
No. She was there.
Yeah.
She was there after Rosie left.
Okay, right. After Rosie left. And what was that, 5 years ago?
Maybe.
And she's still wearing that funeral home makeup, cremation number 5. She sits up there, looks like a corpse. With black lipstick moving, she looks like an old witch doctor doll in blackface, black. What's up with that?
I don't know. Just get to the subject. Let's get Magneto on here. What's up, Magneto?
Peace.
What's up, peace, homeboy?
All these faggots in the world, man. Hey, man. I don't know what time it is, man.
Well, whoa.
Is dude guilty or what? I don't know.
We don't know whether or not he's guilty, but wait. We do know he's gay. There's no dispute here. He's admitted that he had a relationship with the first young man. He's openly admitted that.
Now, what's wrong with that, Magneto?
I I mean, you know, to each his own, you know. In my book, I'm a pyramid builder, you know, so I don't play in that stuff there, you know.
Let me tell you something, Magneto. Don't you be coming on here running your mouth about...
For those of you who don't know what Magneto just said, he said he's a pyramid builder. In essence, he's saying he's a black man from the motherland. And he doesn't dabble in the Mbati ways, right?
That's right.
Well, you could have said it a lot nicer, Mr. Magneto.
We're not here to condemn him. You know, due process. You must have due process. But you don't give yourself an opportunity for due process when you just up and skedaddle out of Sesame Street. You don't do it. You protect your good name. You stand up and you defend yourself. Everyone has the right to due process, and he's not doing that.
And you know what? You know what else too? Now, if this other kid were to come back, the first kid, he can't get no money.
Well, no, he's already received a payoff. He did get a payoff. Yeah, he got a payoff, but now he wants to give that payoff back and come back into the fray. And I'm assuming because he got word.
Hey, I'm ready to go with him. Let me in, man.
Poverty, you're in.
You're in poverty.
Yeah, I'm in. Okay, my brother. You know what, my brother?
What's going on?
I mean, you said, you know what? Reece said something earlier with that Kevin Rose guy.
Kevin Clash.
Yeah, I can't really agree with you, brother. I can't really agree with you, Reece, man. I don't like
what
you're saying.
Tell me why, please.
You know, because you're saying, well, how black people hate on other black people, because they ain't got no money. Because they're rich.
Okay, you're talking about my conversation with Dr. Rose. I'll let you get in on that. I promise you I will. We will come back to that. As soon as I'm done with the Elmo thing. I promise I'll let you get in on that. Because I don't want to switch gears right now. I'll go back to that, Poverty, because I know you want to get in on that conversation.
You got to move your microphone, boss.
My microphone cracked.
No, not yours. I'm talking about Reece.
You're talking about me. Edward in Connecticut is on the line. What's up, Edward?
Hey, what's up, Reece?
So
I didn't catch the whole conversation, just to end with Dr. Rose.
Okay, we'll get into that shortly. I don't want to know anybody's response to this.
You've got to do something about that microphone.
The microphone's away from me.
I don't know, but you're bubbling real bad.
Okay. Kevin Clash gets a second allegation. First thing he does, he takes a leave of absence when the first thing happens. He says, okay, I'm done. All right, I'm going back to work. A second kid comes out. And now, all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose, and he just resigns. Elmo's got no hand up his face. It's over now. What's the deal?
If I'm not mistaken, I think Edward did a pretty good Elmo last time. Did you not?
No, it wasn't me.
That wasn't you?
Edward's not taking the rap for that.
No. We're just trying to get Elmo. We're just trying to get Elmo a new puppeteer.
Yeah,
this guy sounds...
the kids are going to notice the voice change.
Well, you know
what? Give
him a British accent. Poverty, you need a job over there. No. Give Elmo a total voice change.
This guy sounds like he's going to turn out to be the gay version of Tiger Woods.
Well, you know what? That's
as if there wasn't one already.
That's pretty astute. Did you guys like this? Did you hear this audio? This is great audio. I found this online. This is great.
Hey, hi everybody. I'm Chris.
Okay, I'm Obama.
He sure is. I work at Hooper Store right here on Sesame Street. I'm on my lunch break right now, so I thought it would be good to take some time to spend some good time with my good buddy Elmo over here.
Oh, yeah, this is like a play date.
Yes, oh yeah, yeah, it's a play date.
Okay.
Elmo, I was surprised to find out that there are a lot of people interested in asking you questions.
Really, they are?
And they really are.
A lot?
A whole lot of questions.
Wow.
In fact, Questions came from all over the world. The public voted on which questions they liked the most, and those are the questions I'm going to be asking you today.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It is cool. Hey, check it out.
From all over the world?
From all over the world. And wow. You know what? While I was in the shower this morning, I thought of something. Since
you going to tell us about what you did in the shower?
That's classic.
Oh,
shit.
Wow, that's awful.
That's classic. You're going to tell us about what you did in the shower?
But he forgot his lines when he heard shower.
I mean, come on. I mean, if that's anything in the world, busted.
Forgot where he was.
He must have forgotten where he was. Oh, I couldn't believe it when I heard it. I just went, there's no way that he just did that. There's no way that he just did that.
You've been trying to snitch on himself for a while, it appears.
Do you really think so?
Dude. Sounds like it to me.
Where's the runway? I have one thing to say. That's Shantae. 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 Shantae.
That's my most favorite song.
Where's the runway? So, yeah, it's a wrap. I don't know how. You know what it is I think is really going to happen? I think that no media sources are going to cover it other than the media that has already. They'll ignore the story. CBS will get cover by not being reported in the media, and they'll be able to move on, and people will act like it didn't even happen unless there's an outrage. I don't think there's going to be much of one, but they're going to just be able to move on. There's like nothing to see here, you know. But
listen,
TMZ,
all
you
of the new
TMZ,
toys are going to remain on the shelves this season. Nobody's going to want to nipple me, Elmo. And it's a wrap. I mean, this is the worst time for this to come out.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's right before Christmas season, right before Black Friday. It's the worst time. Go ahead,
hey,
Magneto.
Hey, look, you think he was a Jew hater?
No more than you are, sir. No more than you are.
Who do you think signed his paycheck, Magneto?
I mean, you know, when you get slick with the Jew boy, that's what he do for you.
I don't think Neil McKellen's going to like you stealing his name either.
you know, Magneto.
Talk about Sashay Shantae.
Magneto, you are probably one of these guys that is so happy about what's happening in Israel right now, aren't you?
Not yet. I wouldn't be happy to Turkey pass at that ass, you know?
this guy is money.
Can I say a quick shout-out, though?
He's money.
Yes, he is. Go ahead, Poverty.
Yeah, I was going to say a quick shout-out to you, though, Reese and JC, my brethren, and Magneto as well.
Thanks.
Magneto.
Yo.
You need to come on my show, you know, as well, you know, Carbon Radio, you know, brother. Because I like your reasoning, brother.
Yeah,
you're not
time,
on my show now.
What time your show come out?
It's
what day?
Well, it's coming on tomorrow, brother. We're discussing hip-hop, brother. We're asking if hip-hop's destroying black people. You see what I'm trying to say? Yeah, we're going to be discussing that. Hey, Reese, you need to come on my show as well, man.
You know what? I'm going to come on your show. I'm going to come on your show as soon as possible.
Come
I
on
promise
Friday.
You I will.
Definitely come on Friday because we discussed Obama again. Is he for us or against us, part two? Yeah, we need on Friday. You see what it is? If I tell you the time, it's going to be British time. I don't understand. I think it might be 6 or 5 hours behind, but I know in our time tomorrow it's 9:30.
That doesn't.
We're 5 hours behind you.
Yeah, exactly. We're five. Right. Are we 5 hours? Yeah, Israel
yeah,
six,
five
right?
Hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're 5 hours behind you. So set it up with JC so I can get the exact time on Eastern Standard Time, and I will definitely come on the show. We're going to take a break shortly because we got to get into our conversation with Dr. Rose and some other news, of course, that's in the media about the DNI. So stick around, guys. I promise we will be right back right here on Reconsider Radio. On Blog Talk Radio.
Over Negro never got much play. From a fine brown sugar ever walking my way, it would remind me as a child what my mama would say.
If Shantae don't want your number, better call Emily.
So I figured out exactly just what had to be done. But could I walk with a white woman without having to run? No more dating gangster bitches walking around with a gun. Find a woman with good credit, finally had me some fun. Now some black girls might think I'm talking to you. It's just a slight misunderstanding.
Now are you lying? It's true.
Alright, it is what it is. Now what's a brother to do? So you know what I'm looking for now when I'm out with my crew.
Now where my fine white women in the party all night?
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
The brothers are searching for alternatives. Find a white girl and the acting was affirmative. A fine European princess.
Who would have guessed?
With fine strength, blonde hair.
Silicone breast.
A vegetarian queen dressed all conservative. No artificial fruit flavors or preservatives. My white woman never gets me upset. Never gives me a story like behind on the rent. Don't have to worry about insurance if the ride got the dent. When she knows I'm in the mood, she quick to have that I spent. My fine white dime, always sweet and bubbly. Never thought, just Caucasian and lovely.
Jennifer's dating who? A black guy? Oh my god.
Now where my fine white women in the party all night?
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now where my fine white women in the party all night?
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right.
With my sweet white women out in Hackensack. If you got silicone breasts, then that ass is slack. Here to put me on the right path, keep a brother winning. No one understands a black man struggle like white women. You black chicks ain't nothing but gold diggers. You don't care what we look like, that's why you dig jigger. It don't matter if my pockets stay small or grow bigger, or you bum do rag bitches ain't seeing one figure. Don't be surprised if I walk up tapping ya. It's just for you to move to see the white girl walking in. That's why you acting all stuck on my boys are laughing at you. Why these white women are treating us like kings from Africa.
Have a great time tonight, honey. Oh, do you need cash? Oh, why don't you take 300? Oh, no, how about 500? Oh, do you want to take my gold card? Or, oh, no, just take my platinum. Anyway, Sue, would you rather take the Benz or do you want to take the Lexus? I think it has more room. Oh, no, you don't have to call me. Just have a great, great time with you and your friends at the strip club.
Now, where my fine white women in the party all night?
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now, where my fine white women in the party all night? Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now where my fine white women in the party all night?
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
It's your birthday, daddy.
That's
it's your birthday.
Right. Now where my fine white women in the party all night?
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
So many people right now motivated to do bullshit over some bull-ass reasons. But we about to put it inside of a love perspective, like love.
We do it all for the love, y'all. Yeah, we do it all for the love, y'all. Whether white, black, Spanish, ain't a thug, y'all. We do it, we give it all for the love, y'all. We just giving it all for the love, y'all. We do it, we do it all for the love, y'all. We hit the party, put your hands up, yeah, y'all. Yeah, we do it all for the love, y'all.
Love getting down in the love of cool weed. Love seeing checks from record companies. Love, love, and love, cause I love what I do. And we do a thing for the 192 and the rest of the country, cause we from there too. Making sure love is given when I get it from you. Everybody, we regulate the party. Come on, love it when I get a little rugged with it. Love, the circumstance to make my dough flow right. Love rocking mics plus the ill style nights. She does it real good, but love to make it more better. Got me kinda open in the DK sweater. Love when my people come home from jail bids. Really love women and I really love kids. Love tight clubs where the music just bang. Can't fool with gas women or a shorty got bang. Loving it,
yeah, yeah,
I'm loving it,
yeah.
Love a woman when she got a tight outfit.
Come on.
Outfit, in an outlook and disposition. You love it when it does a love composition. She love peanut butter and jelly on me. Wildin' out, making hot shit to hot beats. From Ohio to Poughkeepsie. From Phoenix to NC. From Cali to love it when the pressure falls right on me. Love it when God keeps on overlooking. Do a tight show so promoters keep booking.
We do it all for the love, y'all. Yeah, we do it all for the love, y'all. We get the paper, but it's still for the love, y'all. From the heart, inside of the heart, y'all. We do it all for the love, y'all. For real, for the love, y'all. All my people's in the ghetto for the love, y'all. All my people's on the ground for the love, y'all.
Where my crew's wrong, where my people still at? If they call me and I don't call back, 4 weeks at a time, love is still intact. Let's be big about it and realize the fact.
What?
Love it when the underdog comes through. Get a rebel riser, overthrow these rules. Love it when I get spared another day. Used to drink day while my niggas wait day. Love it when I gain control over this. Life is really bigger than the rollie on my wrist. Got a twist to the shit and the answers inside. Show as the world is small and the Mississippi fly. Had to rock a vest over untrue stress. Now I see people rocking theirs in jets. Love it when my loved one really hold me down.
Damn.
Brand new flight and I'm taking off ground.
We do it all for the love, y'all. Check it out, we do it all for the love, y'all. For the love, for the love, for the love, y'all. We get the paper, but it's still for the love, y'all, y'all. We do it all for the love, y'all. For everybody, for the love, y'all. For the white, black, Spanish, they the love, y'all.
Powerful Quest, final album. Right here on Reese on the Radio. Now I know that after the conversation with Dr. Robert Rose, that the guys have a couple of questions about the interview. We'll go to Poverty Supreme because he said he disagreed with me about something that I said.
How can you do a lot,
Dr. Rose?
Hey, brother, I disagreed with a whole lot of what you said, because I didn't like the statement when you saying that how black people, how we are, we don't like black, other black people with money. And there's reasons for that, my brother.
I never said that. Wait. Poverty. Hold on. I never said that. I said I don't like the word class envy. Because the definition of envy is you envy people for having stuff that you don't have and you want it too. What I see today is that what there is a class warfare, and that is punishing those who have more so that you can have a little of what they have. It's a difference. People are using the term class envy. There is no envy.
Okay. What do you mean by that, though, the definition? Because what are we trying to say? Does someone like... Right, does me hating Rick Ross or Nicki Minaj, because of what they, me hating them, does that, go on.
No, I'm not, okay, that's what I was saying to Dr. Rose. I said people use the term class envy. That's a term that a lot of people are using around now, talking about this election, that President Obama was using class envy. And I said that's the wrong terminology, because when you envy something, that means you want it too. What I'm seeing is a society that doesn't want to be rich like those people that you just mentioned and many others. What they see is punishing those people for making all of that money and making them give them some of what they already have. So it's a class warfare. It's punishing those. I don't believe that blacks hate other blacks that do well. I don't believe that at all. I believe that we all have what's called a rich envy. We all envy them. Envy is a bad thing, which they say in the Bible, but there's nothing wrong with you envying the fact that somebody has more as long as it motivates you to want more as well.
All right. Do you think it's wrong for black people, right, for black folk, to ask Obama for anything?
I think it's ardently wrong. I think it goes against the system of government in this country. We do not need the government making sure that we have or we have not. Because when the government can do that, they can control how it is indeed we spend it. They can't just give us money willy-nilly. That's the reason why you have guys like Mayor Bloomberg in New York, and now Rahm Emanuel is planning on taking vending machines, you know, that have junk food in them. You have California talking about meatless Mondays. That's what happens when you have people controlling the money that they dole out. They tell you how and how it is that you can't spend it. So, of course, what Obama's doing as far as giving people money is a bad thing for them, because there are going to be some things that they cannot do. You think the healthcare plan isn't going to now tell poor people that they cannot smoke? Because if you smoke, that means that you're probably more prone to lung disease, and this healthcare plan is not going to cover that. You're going to have to quit smoking in order for the government to pay for it. You have to live healthier lives. That's not freedom. And people may laugh at that and go, well, the government telling you to have to live healthier, you know, that's a freedom I'm willing to give up. Really? That's a freedom that you don't get to live the way you want to live? That's a freedom you're willing to give up? If you're willing to give up any freedom, you might as well be a slave.
Well, that's what I feel that your country's heading in. You know, you said another statement, right, that black people don't teach money enough in the house.
Along with other things, they don't teach children about their mental health. Like, black children do not know their mental health history. In other words, anybody in their family who has heart disease,
not mental health, that's health.
Well, just health. They don't know, well, I said, whether or not they have mental health, whether or not they have health disease problems like, you know, diabetes that runs in their family, cancer, any of those things. They don't know anything about their medical history. What they also don't learn in the household is by their parents in black households, they don't learn about sex and protection. Just telling your kid to put on a condom and your daughter don't get pregnant is not sex education.
Well, you can't say that all black households or that the majority of black households don't know about,
sure,
especially diabetes. Everybody knows grandma got the sugar.
But they don't know about diabetes. In other words, they're not taught
how to prevent
it. No, they
call it sugar.
Well, they're not taught to prevent it.
But we got to understand, right? I get everything you're saying, it's right and exact. But I don't think that white folk educate their kids on these things. They eat shit. They stay, they do the same shit that we do.
If they come from a lower economic background, I'm sure that that's abundantly the case.
Yes, but a majority of the world is living in poverty. The majority of the world, you know, if we did the proper stats, you'd see that the majority of the world are living in shit.
Well, would you really consider that poverty? Would you really consider the fact that people in these households have a color television, have a refrigerator, have air conditioning? Those numbers are up. Those are not impoverished people. Poverty, the true nature of poverty, is having none of those things. You don't have a television. You don't have a stereo. You don't even have a refrigerator.
For me, there's different types of poverty by the country and the economics of the country. That determines what your level of poverty is. So in your country and in my country, someone being in poverty is someone who has to sign on or get gyro, which we call it in our country, JSA, and in your country that would be getting welfare, you know, and benefits. You know what I mean? That is poverty in our country, you know, and the government paying for our rent where we live and where we stay. And you get food stamps. They give people money in this country.
So that's what you say the definition of poverty is? So then I would counter that.
In our countries, but in Africa, the definition of poverty is you don't know where you're going to get food tomorrow or in the foreseeable by next week for me.
How about this? Poverty. Let me ask you this. Would you consider somebody who has a PlayStation game in their home poverty stricken?
Someone who has a PlayStation game in their house as opposed to.
Most people have them things. You can get those things.
Why would somebody?
Poverty, this is the thing. If you can't afford to pay your light bill and you can't afford to buy your kids healthy food and you can't afford health care, then your ass should not be playing PlayStation or watching a 50-inch flat-screen TV with a Coach bag, rocking Manolo boots, and some apple-bottom jeans.
Right.
You shouldn't have to pay that. And I say that for anybody, not just blacks, not just whites, not for everybody. If you are poverty stricken, you are poverty stricken.
You should have none of those things.
No, but sister, again, even if you did sell that TV, and you didn't, you restrained yourself from buying that TV, restrained yourself from buying those big Air Jordans or whatnot, right? You're still. You're going to spend the money on food and drink, and eventually you're going to still be in the same position anyway.
Poverty,
this is the thing. If you think that way, this is how most people that don't have any money think, and that's why they never keep any money. If they have money in their pocket, it's burning a hole in their pocket because they're not used to having it, so they got to go out and spend it. If you think like that, you'll never get anywhere. And if you're poverty stricken for reasons other than, if you're poverty stricken for reasons that are caused by you, and you sitting at home watching a 50-inch flat screen TV, and I'm going out every day and working and paying taxes, I don't want you getting no welfare because you don't want to get up and go to work every day. Now, if you can't, and you need some temporary assistance, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with it. I won't be an asshole because, for real, I can say, you know what? It's my damn tax money. I work for it. I want it to go to who I want it to go to. But it doesn't work that way, and I understand that. If you need temporary help, I have no problem going to work every day paying taxes to help those people out. But there's so many people out there that look at help from the government as permanent help.
Sister, I hear what you're trying to say, right? But at the end of the day, I don't think welfare checks, right? One welfare check can buy, even in this country, I can say for, because I've been on benefits before, right? One welfare check can't afford to buy even two or three. It'll take about three checks before you could buy that TV. That means you're not going to be eating for maybe 6 weeks.
Well, again, poverty.
Oh, no. But wait.
So you
could
afford it when you had a job.
They're subsidizing their government income, their government checks. They're subsidizing that with hustling. I don't care whether you hustling T-shirts out the back of your trunk of your car, if you hustling crack, if you hustling videos. Maybe you have a good computer at home and you can copy DVDs and stuff like that. You can, at one point people are selling music CDs and shit out the back of their cars or doing whatever. People subsidize that. Now, if you're on welfare and you're getting it, you're getting that temporary help, you get that temporary help until you find work and then you can make it on your own. It's not my responsibility to keep you in the lap of luxury at home because your ass was unfortunate to find a job or to do any of that. You don't get to enjoy the luxuries of life. Those are luxuries. But see, people think that those things are now so common every day that they deserve it. It's a necessity. I get my paycheck at the end of every 2 weeks, I look at my paycheck and I'm like, damn, I deserve to go out and buy myself something. I worked for that money. But you know what?
And you do.
The landlord don't want to hear that. The electric people don't want to hear that. If I want cable, they don't want to hear that. If I need internet service, they don't want to hear that. The car note people, the car insurance people. So I have to pay everybody else before I can even pay myself.
Yeah.
And that's just the way the ball bounces. That's what you got to do.
I understand what you're trying to say, sister, right? And that's what I'm trying to say. You could have worked, bought what you're...
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Bobby, it sounds like we lost you.
Yeah, I got cut off, so I missed
No, I got you, Edward. Let's get Magneto in here. Magneto, you there?
I'm in the shower right now.
Are you just listening while you're in the shower?
Rub-a-dub-dub in the tub-tub-tub. Okay, Edward. We'll go to you then. Magneto is washing his ass.
Hold on.
Magneto, you know, we can't smell you over the radio, boo. You could have waited for that.
Hold on. Magneto, I got to play this for him. Magneto, this one's for you, buddy. This is perfect for you.
Are you going to tell us about what you did in the shower?
Oh, shit.
You going to tell us about what you did in the shower?
Cool, right?
Okay, let's go to Edward in Connecticut.
Hello, Edward.
Hey, guys, I missed a whole bunch of the conversations and I got cut off.
I know you got cut off. What did you want to ask about? What did you want to say about my conversation with Dr. Rose?
Oh, you know, I want to say that I would really like to hear him and Dennis get into a conversation. You know, some being of the same sort, same age range, but different philosophies. I'd like to hear what they have to say to each other.
You said you'd really like to hear what he had to say with who?
With Dennis.
Yeah, Dennis.
Oh, is Dennis? Are you there or is that Big Bird?
I'm here. It's
well,
been here.
Somebody told me that I have Big Bird here.
Yeah, that's me.
There you go. But did you have a comment about my conversation with Dr. Rose?
I didn't hear it, so I can't comment.
Oh, you didn't hear it?
I was going to say that this problem with Elmo gives new meaning to the word Big Bird.
Indeed, it does.
You know, when I played that audio.
When I heard that audio today, I was just like, oh, my God. It was literally, all I did was, like, I looked up a funny Elmo video, and that video came up, and I watched it. And when he said that line about, you're going to tell us about what you did in the shower? I said, perfect.
See, I was going to ask a question to Poverty in Britain. That
yes.
Being on Dole, would he more likely vote Labour, or would he ever consider voting Tory?
Listen, brother, yeah. Me as a black man, right, and I'm going to say this for black people worldwide, yeah. If we for me to be a fool and still be voting in 2012, I say, if heaven help you, black people worldwide.
I'm not talking about black people.
You
I'm talking about
voting.
As a Briton.
No,
as
me,
a Briton.
As a Briton.
If a Briton is on the dole.
As a Briton, I'm just saying.
As a Briton, who would be on the dole?
Yes, yes.
Here in the United States,
I
they say
that
most people that would be on welfare would be Obama's natural constituents.
Yeah.
So I would be asking, would that be the same in the UK, that you would more likely vote Labour than Tory?
No. Yeah, so they would most probably more vote for Labour. But let me tell you something. They would not get rid of that in this country. Because if we face facts, right, And we deal with common sense. If you get rid of these benefits and the gyro in England, there's going to be an increase of crime. Do you understand? If people can't get what they need, they're going to go out and steal it. And I'm not going to deny it. If I couldn't get no money, I'm not right? If I couldn't, I've got a job anyway. But if I couldn't get any money to feed my child and there was no money around, I'm going to go out and take it.
Yeah, but
I understand that, but do you think
on,
that
guys.
The government is taxing you more than what it needs to provide those necessities? You can't
Absolutely.
Even watch television without paying a tax. We don't have that kind of tax in the United States.
But wait a minute, I have to stop Poverty here. Poverty, this is where I'll disagree with you about this. I believe wholeheartedly that most people no matter who it is that they are, where it is they come from. I understand that stealing out of necessity is very, very different than stealing out of anger, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about the Great Depression, where kids used to steal fruits and vegetables because they were starving, and the kids would, like, grab a couple of apples or some oranges and run away from the store vendor so he could eat because he was hungry, that's a lot different. When you look at – Wait, hold on. When you look at the dire situations, think about Hurricane Sandy, a perfect example of a dire situation. It's a perfect example. When Hurricane Sandy hit New York, the stories we reported right here, and everyone here on the line can attest to this, the stories that I reported after Hurricane Sandy, do you know what those people were doing in the Coney Island section of Brooklyn? That's a black neighborhood. Do you know where they were robbing? They were robbing a liquor store. Okay? They were robbing the liquor store. They popped a hole into the roof of a liquor store and were pulling out Grey Goose and Hennessy.
Well, I'm not going to deny that, you know, but at the end of the day, that's why the devil, yeah, he puts us in the ghettos and he puts liquor stores and drugs in our neighborhoods, because they know, at the end of the day, the devil knows that if we're in the position of a downtrodden mentality, we're going to turn to drugs and other recreation that will take our minds away from it. And that's why, that's the only reason why I could get with, because when I was younger and, you know, I used to feel depressed. I used to drink alcohol and smoke a lot of weed until I said I wanted to have a career in sports, so I had to stop doing it.
Yeah, but I don't believe that these people, there are a lot of people out there who live in those hoods. I don't believe that they would resort to crime, because I think morally they would think that it was wrong and they would be more concerned about going to jail than being poor and hungry. Edward,
they didn't go rioting, breaking into stores.
Hey, you're absolutely right. Edward, go ahead. Yeah, I want to say you were absolutely right, because during the Great Depression, there was no increase in crime. There was a slight increase, but none that could be attributed to the, you know, people who, you know, the massive amount of poverty that, you know, came into depression. So this crime and, you know, saying that people, when they get poor, are going to go out robbing and stealing, it's not accurate, except for the people who say they're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
I'll tell you one thing that I know within these communities. Even though people going to jail may be a real circumstance or a constant norm in some of these neighborhoods, but when you look at the majority of the people who live in those communities, it's not a huge percentage of those people who have been to jail at some particular time. And I know that most people, even if they're poor or they're hungry, will not risk freedom in order to sustain that sort of, you know, a having food in their stomach. They would be more apt to ask people for help as opposed to committing a crime to do it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't remember people in the South, the blacks, rioting and breaking into white-owned businesses during the Great Depression. The sharecroppers didn't do that. They would turn to the church. They would turn to themselves. They would turn to the family. Or they'd say, we don't have it. We'll do the best we can by God.
You know why? You know why that happened? Because black people are waking up. That's why. And they know who it is they should rob. And in the day, when these things happen, everyone should go and tear down the banks and all them shops there, yeah. Because they exploit our people. They're sitting there with all their food and them waiting. Why don't they come and offer it to the people? Because if I had a shop, right, and I was living in that sort of disaster, I would welcome people to come in and take my food and that. At the end of the day, I understand I'm losing money, but at the end of the day, human life is more worth more than my riches. You understand? It's just greedy ass people. Bottom line, you know, people need to deal with some righteousness and some balance out here. You know, you're exploiting the people. Already you're a bloodsucker, because you need people's money to keep your business going.
Poverty,
here's what I find scary. I think that it's presumptuous of you and many others like you to determine that rich people or people who have money do not give in their own individual way. We're under this impression. People are under this impression. It's a lot of the same claims they made about Mitt Romney. The idea was everybody just said, oh, he was this corporate hack who took everything, didn't care about the little guy. He only cared about himself. And then in his private, because he didn't brag about it. He didn't tell the world that he was this giver and he was this giver of money. But then they found out. Here's the thing. Then they found out how much money he gave to charity. And turns out that all of the candidates, that Mitt Romney alone gave away more money in 1 year than Obama, Biden, and his own running mate, Paul Ryan, did in 1 year. That one man with $250 million that he's worth, he gave away more money than all three of the people who were running for office during the race in 1 year. And what did they say? Hold on. But what did they say that he should have done? He should have given more. But the bottom line is, why doesn't anybody say that about people that they like? Nobody. President Obama is president of the United States for 8 years. He's a multimillionaire. Shouldn't he just give up half of it? Shouldn't he just give up $2.5 million?
Well, I haven't seen Whoopi giving away any of her fortune.
Wait. Hold on. You want to talk about worse than that? The worse than that poverty? His brother. His brother is living in a shack in Kenya. He hasn't given him a dime. The man makes $1 and a half a day.
Yes. And I agree with you, brother. But at the end of the day, again, I know that you're a very intelligent man. And you must know by now, right, I understand money, right? So if you, I'm just saying, because you're saying, you know, people should understand money and all them. And if you understand money, you'll know that you're in a sinking ship anyway. My understanding of money is every time we take a dollar or a pound, we're giving back. We owe the country owes more money because the country is always in debt to this Federal Reserves or the World Bank. You know, so it doesn't really matter whatever goes on. You know, the devil's got us well unlocked, and we know that. Look how long we've been raising money for Africa, all these other countries. People gave money to Haiti.
Please don't even get me started there.
None of the money reaches to Africa. Africa's still in the same shit. Countries from like England and America have been raising money for Africa for the last 30 years. Ever since I was born, I can remember charities for all poor countries. And these countries.
Maybe we shouldn't give them a dime anymore.
You
let them stand on their own 2 feet.
Well,
they used to be food exporters in Africa.
We're giving the African
if Britain and America weren't.
We're giving the governments this money, and the governments in Africa are doing what they will with it. That's different. They have very corrupt governments there.
Yes.
Look at what they did in Haiti.
Come on, but wait.
But listen, poverty. Listen to what twist on for size. Right. The United States of America offered $100 million. $100 million. They gave to Haiti after the earthquakes of January 2010, right? After the earthquakes of January 2010, the United States gave them $100 million. George Clooney did a benefit concert, and he gave them $66 million. A year later, a million people were still living in tents because it's a corrupt government. You're going to tell me $166 million?
I'm not going to deny what you're saying, you know. But if you do the record and you look up, you have to follow the money, right? And who... Listen, when I look at... I see through bullshit, right? So when I see them... Right, they had the Coney situation earlier this year. These guys are walking around with AK-47s. Where are these Africans getting these German guns from? I'm seeing them with Winchesters and 48s or whatever you call it. They're from America. This guy's bought and paid for, and all those leaders who sucked the life out of Africa, right, are all bought and paid for by Britain and American intelligence. This is fact.
Did you say AK-47?
AK-47s. Those are not American weapons.
That's what I thought.
They're German weapons.
No, it's a Russian weapon.
The Russian
weapon.
The area is filled with Russian weapons, not American weapons. One of the many factual inaccuracies you've been spouting.
Poverty, hold on, poverty. We'll get into this another time because it is near the end of our show. We won't get to the end of the show. Why isn't everybody waiting for the end for us to get here? That's when we get to deep. Thank you, guys. We'd like to thank Dr. Robert Rose for being a guest on the show. We will be back tomorrow before we take the long four-day weekend. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Dennis, the Mass Menace. Edward in Connecticut. Poverty Supreme. Out, of course, out in the UK. And we'll see you guys tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks for joining us. It's Reese on the Radio.
But the E&D, follow me into the sun and let the song free. The E&D, 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 the E&D